The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable William S. Greenberg presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. This is Judge Greenberg. With me are Judges Meredith and Jayquist, here to consider arguments in Brady versus the Secretary. counsel, beginning with Appellant's counsel, please enter your appearances.
April Donahauer on behalf of Joe Brady. With me is Amy Odom.
Counsel for the Secretary.
Yes, sir. Stuart Anderson on behalf of the Appellee Secretary of Veterans Affairs. With me is Anna Whited.
Thank you very much. Does Appellant's counsel wish to reserve any time?
Yes, Your Honor, 10 minutes, please.
All right. Very good. All right, let's start with Appellant's counsel, please.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. It is undisputed that Mr. Brady was seeking additional compensation for his left knee disability. And it is also undisputed that the severance of service connection prevented him from getting that additional compensation. Because there could be no additional compensation without service connection, the propriety of the severance was a question the board had to address in the matter of Mr. Brady's entitlement to an increased rating. The board's failure to address that question prejudiced Mr. Brady because it is undisputed that the severance was defective. Even if a veteran appeals only the ultimate question of entitlement to additional compensation, the board must review all questions necessary to a decision in the matter. The defective severance changed the factual and legal background of Mr. Brady's pending appeal. To hold that the board could ignore whether that change should have occurred would be contrary to the board's statutory jurisdiction, would elevate formalism over substance, and would impose a technical and burdensome pleading requirement on veterans.
I just interrupt you very briefly. What is the statute you just referred to?
7104A, Your Honor.
And what is that?
That provides that all questions in a matter which under Section 511A of this title is subject to a decision by the Secretary shall be subject to one review on appeal. Final decisions on such appeals shall be by the board, and decisions of the board shall be based on the entire record and upon consideration of all evidence and material record. But the applicable language there is all questions in a matter.
All right, and you want us to settle that issue here? All questions is to be broadly interpreted?
We're not asking for a broad interpretation, Your Honor, so much as we are arguing that because the severance here occurred during the pendency of the appeal for increased compensation, the propriety of the severance was a question in the matter of entitlement to increased compensation here.
And it should have been addressed below. Is that your argument?
It should have been addressed by the board, Your Honor. The RO did effectuate the severance, and it did so while after Mr. Brady had perfected an appeal for an increased rating. So when his appeal reached the board, he no longer had service connection for the disability for which he was claiming increased compensation.
I understand. Proceed. Go ahead.
The Secretary's fundamental misunderstanding here is that the RO could resolve the question of Mr. Brady's continuing service connection when the matter of additional compensation was already before the board. His entitlement to continued service connection was a prerequisite to his obtaining additional compensation for his left knee disability, because of course there cannot be additional compensation for a disability that's not service connected.
Ms. Donahauer,
excuse me, but didn't Mr. Brady leave the issue with the RO by not explicitly raising the issue with the board?
No, he did not, Your Honor. And the applicable notice of disagreement here is Mr. Brady's notice of disagreement with the rating that he received for his knee disability, and perfected that appeal well before service connection was severed. Unless or until he withdrew his appeal for additional compensation, he was presumed to be seeking the most compensation that the law supported. And of course, he could not get additional compensation for a disability that was not service connected. So he did not need to separately appeal the severance because it was a because service connection was a prerequisite to his prevailing on the matter that he had appealed.
But didn't the severance decision process follow the same one that Mr. Brady was familiar with and had navigated successfully with respect to the disability rating, the rating decision, the notice of disagreement, statement of the case, and filing an appeal? He took such of those steps as were his in connection with the rating decision, but then did not do so with respect to the severance decision. Isn't that right?
That's correct, Your Honor, but it's of no moment to whether the severance was a question in the matter before the board, because the matter before the board was increased compensation. Mr. Brady continued to appeal that matter and continued to indicate his belief in his entitlement to additional compensation. And so the necessary prerequisite of service connection was a question in that matter.
And it's your position that that's true, even though Mr. Brady did not respond to the November 2018 notice letter saying that to complete your appeal of the severance issue, you must file a formal appeal, and telling him that the case would be closed if he didn't do that?
Yes, Your Honor, because the board obtained jurisdiction over the severance at the time that the RO effectuated the severance. It did not require additional action on Mr. Brady's part to place that question into the matter before the board.
And didn't the board consider the severance in deciding the veteran's appeal? It expressly relied upon it, the severance, in denying a rating increase, didn't it?
The board did not address the propriety of the severance, Your Honor. And that goes to the heart, I think, of the dispute between the parties here. Because the propriety of the severance was key to whether 3.400.01 barred additional compensation, the board had to look at the antecedent question of whether Mr. Brady should still be service connected. The question of the propriety of the severance was part of the matter before the board, not just the question of whether there still was service connection.
And did the board's reliance on the severance implicitly endorse its propriety?
No, Your Honor. The board looked at what the RO had done and essentially deemed its hands to be tied. And in that way, it allowed the RO to resolve a question that really was on appeal to the board at the time that the severance became effective.
But the board didn't say that, did they? They didn't say our hands are tied or we don't have jurisdiction to address the propriety of the severance.
They did, Your Honor. I think in that they said we must deny the increased rating appeal as a matter of law.
Judge Shakewith, did you have more on that?
I've said enough.
If I could jump in. Essentially, with your conversation with Judge Aikwith, is that the appellant did not perfect his appeal of the 2017 severance decision. But in your brief, you argued that if the board had addressed the propriety of severance, it would have determined that the RO did not meet its burden of establishing that the award of service connection was clearly and unmistakably erroneous. So to clarify, is it your position that the board in the decision on appeal should essentially have conducted a direct review of the unappealed 2017 severance decision?
Yes, Your Honor, the board should have reviewed the propriety of the severance because the severance was a question in the matter of Mr. Brady's entitlement to increased compensation.
But it's the review of the RO decision in a different claim stream that wasn't appealed is what I'm getting at. How do you square that with principles of finality, that you have a final RO decision on severance and you want the board in the decision on appeal to have reviewed that decision even though it wasn't appealed?
It was not a final decision, Your Honor, because the question became a part of the appeal that was pending before the board. The RO could not divest the board of the ability to decide entitlement to additional compensation on the merits by taking away the upstream element of service connection.
The case law that you rely on about whether an issue is part and parcel or whether there are different questions within the same matter, does any of that case law allow the board to direct review an unappealed RO decision?
There was an appealed RO decision here, Your Honor, and that was the decision that awarded Mr. Brady only a 10% rating for the left knee disability. Harper
decision itself did not address the issue of severance.
That's correct, Your Honor, but the appeal encompassed continuing service connection at the point when service connection was severed. Harper supports our argument because there was an unappealed rating decision there that took place when TDIU was already on appeal to the board. Because the question of entitlement to TDIU for the entire period on appeal was already before the board, the RO could not bifurcate part of the appeal period from the pending appeal.
The board was required essentially to address the issues that were within its own claim stream. TDIU was within its own claim stream, so it had to address that, as opposed to reviewing what the RO did in a separate claim stream that was not appealed.
The appeal stream here is for additional compensation for Mr. Brady's left knee disability. The severance was part of that claim stream because it barred Mr. Brady from obtaining the relief that he was seeking on his appeal of the 10% rating. So the focus on what RO decision was appealed here should be on the RO decision that denied Mr. Brady entitlement to a rating above 10%.
So an RO decision that did not address the propriety of severance. But let me change. I see time is winding down a bit. Let me change course a little here. In the 2016 letter that notified the appellant that VA was proposing to sever service connection, they notified him that he could submit evidence to show that the proposed action should not be taken. He could do that either within the 60-day window, and if he did it outside of the 60-day window, it said, your adjusted benefits will continue at the reduced rate while we review the additional evidence. And then in the 2017 letter that notified the appellant that severance had been finalized, it again told him, you can submit additional evidence, and if you do, at any time, we will reevaluate your claim. So the first question is, has the appellant submitted to the RO additional evidence to try to demonstrate that severance was inappropriate?
He has not, to my knowledge, Your Honor. And on that note, it is not his burden to establish that he should have continued service connection. The burden is on the government to prove that the severance is correct. And on that note, the RO did not establish that service connection was clearly and unmistakably erroneous. But I will say that Mr. Braddy did indicate his continuing belief that his left knee disability should be service connected in his 2019 request for TDIU when asked to list what service connected disabilities prevented him from working. The left knee disability was among them. And against all this, as a background matter, is that a veteran is presumed to be seeking the maximum benefits allowed by law unless and until the veteran indicates otherwise. And he never indicated that he wished to withdraw his appeal for increased compensation. And of course, the necessary prerequisite to that is continued service connection for that disability.
I could just follow up, though, on the appellant did not submit the RO. Essentially has said, send us evidence and we'll reevaluate whether service connection is appropriate for the left knee. Why isn't that the appropriate avenue to seek redress of going back to the RO, submitting evidence and trying to reestablish service connection?
Because it as I stated in the opening, Your Honor, it places a technical and burdensome pleading requirement on a veteran who has made it abundantly clear that he believes his disability should be service connected and indicated to the agency that he would like additional compensation for that disability. It's already clear that the veteran continues to believe that service connection is appropriate.
So on that note, in the decision appeal, arguably the board did not address the propriety of severance. It relied on 3.400. Did the appellant below explicitly argue that the board should address the propriety of severance?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor. I will say he received a supplemental statement of the case on the rating issue that did provide an indication of the impact of the severance, and that told him if you continue to want a higher rating for your left knee disability, you do not need to respond. We will continue to presume that you are seeking a higher rating for that knee disability. This is also a quite convoluted series of events that Mr. Braddy, who was represented by a VSO at the time, but not by counsel, would understandably have had difficulty following.
So the issue was not explicitly raised. Do we need to find that it was reasonably raised before we would address it? And if you're contending that the issue was reasonably raised, I'd like you to address the 2017 board decision, where the board remanded the issue of the higher rating, saying that it was intertwined with the separate action going on at the RO about severance. At the time, the appellant had filed an NOD as to severance, but had not yet perfected. Basically, the board was suggesting that any redress as to the propriety of severance should happen in that other claim stream. So how was that issue raised reasonably in this claim stream?
It was raised by the RO's effectuation of the severance, Your Honor, and by operation of 3.400.01. Once the severance became effective, the question of its propriety became a question in the matter of the compensation that Mr. Braddy continued to seek.
Does anything in 3.400, paragraph 01, does anything in that section suggest that the propriety of severance is at issue? I believe the words it uses is, has been terminated. Has severance been has service connection been terminated? Not whether it was appropriately terminated. What in that regulation suggests to you that there has to be an inquiry into whether it was appropriate as opposed to whether it happened?
It's 7104A, Your Honor, that imposes the obligation to look at the propriety of the severance. The role of the regulation is to make the severance operative in entitlement to obtaining an increased rating. And it's the statute requiring the board to look at all questions in the matter that obligated the board to look not just at whether service connection had been severed, but whether it should have been severed.
Anything else, Judge Meredith? At this point?
Not at this point, thank you.
Judge Jaquith, anything at this point?
Yes, Judge, I have one more question. Sure. Mr. Donahoe, was there evidence before the board showing this that the severance was improper? And if not, how was Mr. Brady prejudiced by the board's decision?
My time is running very short.
Don't worry about it. We'll just add a few more minutes. 2 minutes.
Thank you.
Go ahead and answer.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's the government's burden to prove by clear and unmistakable evidence that service connection is improper. The evidence here was at best equivocal on the question of whether Mr. Brady's knee disability should have been continued to be service connected. The 2016 opinion on page 1517 of the record is the latest in a series of equivocal opinions about whether Mr. Brady's disability was related to an in-service injury. And as we argued in our opening brief, because the evidence was equivocal at best, the government failed to meet its burden to establish that severance was correct. And neither the board, because it failed to address the matter, nor the secretary has defended the propriety of the severance here. So Mr. Brady was prejudiced because had the board looked at this issue, it would have recognized that the stringent burden to establish severance was not met here.
But their response is that it wasn't addressed because it wasn't raised, right?
That's based on a misinterpretation of the scope of the board's jurisdiction over this appeal, which extended not just to whether the severance occurred, but whether the severance should have occurred.
And that encompassed even the veteran's testimony before the board when he testified in August of 2017, the same day he filed the notice of disagreement. He didn't say a thing about severance or even discuss the origin of his injury. He was focused on the worsening of his knee condition. Isn't that right?
And unmistakable in that testimony, Your Honor, is his belief that that disability was service connected and thus that he was entitled to additional compensation for it.
Anything else, Judge Jaquith?
No, thank you.
All right. Thank you, counsel. You can address anything else you need to on rebuttal.
Thank you.
All right. We'll hear from the secretary. Go ahead.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Stuart Anderson, and together, the board did not have jurisdiction to consider the propriety of the severance of service connection for appellant's left knee disability for three reasons. First, appellant never filed a substantive appeal to appeal that severance to the board. Second, the propriety of the severance is not a question in the matter of the increased rating appeal because service connection and ratings are distinct matters. And third, the regional office's severance of service connection did not deprive the board of jurisdiction over the increased rating appeal. And because the board did not have jurisdiction to review the propriety of the severance, it correctly denied entitlement to an increased rating for the left knee disability, and this court should affirm the board's decision. To begin, the court did not have jurisdiction over severance because appellant never filed a substantive appeal. And Congress gave the board jurisdiction to review appeals that are initiated with an NOD and completed with a substantive appeal. And without a substantive appeal, the decision is final and so subject to reopening with new and material evidence or a collateral attack with an allegation of Q. The statutory provisions that appellant is relying on, section 7104 and 511, are not in either their contents or, as this court has ever interpreted them, exceptions to the general rule regarding board jurisdiction and finality. Where section 7104 provides that all questions in a matter on appeal shall be subject to one review on appeal to the secretary, and 511 provides that the secretary shall decide all questions of law and fact necessary to a decision by the secretary, these have to be read together with 7105, and read together, they mean this, that if a veteran wants to appeal a matter to the board, the veteran has to file a substantive appeal. And once the veteran has done that, the veteran is entitled to a decision by the board of all the questions that are needed to decide that matter and only that matter. In this case, where there was no
Mr. Anderson, excuse me, hasn't our court specifically said otherwise in Percy? We reject the secretary's assertion that the court in Roy v. Brown properly concluded that a substantive appeal is jurisdictional. This isn't really a jurisdictional question, is it?
Yes, Your Honor, it is a jurisdictional question. The decision in Percy relates to the requirement of a timely appeal as a requirement for the board to take jurisdiction over an appeal. The decision in Percy does not talk about the case in which there is no substantive appeal at all. And to date, there is no document that could be interpreted as a substantive appeal.
But that's not really right. Well, I mean, not the last part, but the Percy part is not right. That it relied on a case, Burrell, that said there was no record of a substantive appeal in the case. And the board still, nonetheless, had jurisdiction to consider it. And that's because this really isn't quite, the board had subject matter and personal jurisdiction here, didn't they, over both severance and the rating decision, and of course, over the veteran.
Your Honor, the board's subject matter jurisdiction is still limited by section 7105, in the sense that that is the authority under which Congress gave the board jurisdiction.
There's two reasons why that isn't jurisdictional, though, aren't there? One is that that is what the Supreme Court has called a claims processing rule, not a jurisdictional bar impediment. And then secondly, 7105, and to follow up on how the Supreme Court defines what's jurisdictional and what's a case processing rule, it's permissive. It's not mandatory. What the parties do affects whether how the case proceeds. And when something is truly jurisdictional, that's not the case. The parties can't add or subtract from the board's jurisdiction any more than they can from the court's. Isn't that right?
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. The board has no authority to add or subtract from its own jurisdiction.
The parties don't have authority to do it either.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So the board is not deprived of jurisdiction by the party's shortcoming here, by the veteran's shortcoming here, is the point in my question to you. How is that not true?
Your Honor, the decision in Percy and the decision in the cases or the decisions that revolve around this question of whether something is a claims processing rule have centered on the question of whether the board could accept some document, some indication as an adequate substantive appeal in order for the board to take jurisdiction over a matter. There's nothing in those lines of decisions that allow the board to sua sponte reach down and take jurisdiction over a matter. At most, under Percy, what the board would be looking at is whether there was something that it could waive into its jurisdiction, in the sense that, was there a document untimely that it could accept? Was there a document that on the wrong form nevertheless indicated the proper intent to appeal the decision to the board? Something along those lines is what follows from the decision in Percy. And not only has that issue not been raised before the board or before the court, there's nothing in the record that would raise the issue under Robinson so that the board was required to address it in the first instance.
Well, why isn't severance put at issue in this appeal? Because Mr. Braddy's February 2013 formal appeal specified that he was appealing all of the issues in the statement of the case. And the statement of the case said his claim was being referred for review of whether service connection should be severed.
Your Honor, there had not been a decision yet at that point for there to be either an NOD of or a substantive appeal to the board concerning. At that point, it was simply, as it stated, a notice of a possible intended decision coming forward. And so there was
pretty
no
good evidence that the issue was reasonably raised, though, don't you think?
That the issue of his severance. Intent to appeal.
That the issue of severance was reasonably raised in connection with his increased rating claim.
Your Honor, I understand we're talking about whether the board was required to address whether it had jurisdiction over the severance on the basis of that appeal.
No, I've moved past that. I'm asking you about whether the matter was raised before in the case such that the board should have acted on it.
Understood. No, Your Honor, it was not, because that statement of the case did not represent a statement of the case following a decision by the regional office that was subject to an NOD. So we have one NOD, one rating decision, and one SOC from which an appeal could follow, but no substantive appeal followed.
Didn't the VA confuse the issue when it sent notice of its decision severing entitlement on March 17th, and then 4 days later issued a supplemental statement of the case stating that service connection had been severed, continuing the 10% rating from 2009 till the time of severance in 2017, and citing 3400O for the proposition that a retroactive increase couldn't be awarded after severance. And then that SSOC was sent to the veteran via a cover letter that told him that if he wished to continue his appeal to the board, and he'd already filed a formal appeal, a response to the SSOC was optional. How can VA say that and later assert that the veteran's failure to respond to the SSOC with another Form 9 extinguishes his challenge to severance?
Your Honor, there was a statement of the case, the final statement of the case regarding severance, informed the veteran that in order to perfect this appeal to the board, in order to complete the appeal to the board, he should file a substantive appeal following that statement of the case. So at that point, Your Honor, the veteran or appellant would have been on notice of the obligation to appeal to the board in order for the board to have jurisdiction. And again, returning to the source of the board jurisdiction is the statutory grant. And so the board would have to look back, or any decision by this court has to look back to Section 7105 in order to find that the board had jurisdiction in the first case.
Well, what is there about that statute that says they didn't have jurisdiction? I mean, the facts are before the board. So mandating the filing of an additional form, is that consistent with the intent of Congress in that statute?
Yes, Your Honor, because the intent of Congress is reflected in that statute is to require a veteran who seeks to review a rating decision to accept at least one statement or to permit the agency to provide at least one statement explaining more fully the basis for that decision, and then for the veteran in question to provide an indication to the board that the veteran intended the board to review that. That is the structure that Congress laid out. And so it would be consistent in this case to play that out.
All right. Judge Meredith, do you have a question at this point?
I do. I'd like to get back to something you alluded to at the beginning. So what are an appellant's options in the face of having service connections severed? Is it to submit new and material evidence or a Q motion? Are those the options to try to reestablish service connection?
Your Honor, to the way to reestablish service connection for the entire period would be to file an allegation Q in the regional office's severance of service connection. So that would be the way left this point for the veteran to challenge the decision that's already been made.
So if he submitted, as the 2016 and 2017 letters suggested, new evidence to try to demonstrate that severance was improper, it would be point forward. Is that what I understand you to be saying?
Well, Your Honor, if in response to the initial letters he had submitted evidence, that would have been considered as a result or in part of the regional office's original decision, whether or not to sever service connection in the first place.
And just following up on some of the things Judge Jakewith was asking about, whether we call this jurisdiction or not at the board, the appellant in his brief is essentially asking that the board review what happened in the unappealed 2017 RO decision. Can I get you to reflect on that if we don't believe there's some document out there that could be construed as a substantive appeal and the board essentially did or could the board have waived it? I think you already answered to Judge Jakewith. But what would give the board the authority to review an RO decision in another claim stream?
Your Honor, the question or the dispute underlying that is the question of what constitutes a question in a matter. That's the legal basis for the argument that we've heard under 7104 and 511. Under those statutes, however, the severance is not a question in a matter because a question in a matter is something whose determination is necessary to the resolution of that matter in the sense that the agency has some obligation to address it in the course of addressing that matter. And that is distinct from the sense that appellant proposes in that it is outcome determinative or done while the other decision is pending. In this case, the propriety of severance did not have to be addressed for the board to decide the increased rating appeal. As Judge Jakewith noted, the question, in as much as there was a question relating to severance, it was simply, had service connection been severed? And this analysis, this sort of strict necessity test for determining what's a question in the matter follows from the Federal Circuit's analysis in Jackson. So in both Bernard and Jackson, we see that the matter in this case would be entitlement to an increased rating. But in Jackson, when the court was identifying that new and material evidence was a question in the matter, it drew a connection between three points. The first was that that new and material evidence was a question in the matter, such that the board could address it, even though the RO already had. The second point was that by law under 7105, there could not be a grant of service connection without new and material evidence. And the third point was, again, the board's authority thereby to readdress it. So under that framework, we see that VA and the court have treated service connection and increased ratings as separate matters, in the sense that when a veteran is granted service connection by the RO, appeals that decision to the board in terms of the rating assigned, the board looks at the rating, but doesn't revisit the question of service connection. Under Jackson, however, the board would be entitled, authorized, as the court said there, to revisit that question of service connection. And under 511, the board would actually be obliged to, because it says that the secretary shall decide. And that's not the way those separate matters have been treated in this court or by the agency. As a result, a separate substantive appeal would have to be brought in order to bring the matter of the severance before the board, because it is not, under the analysis laid out in Jackson, going to be a question in the matter of an increased rating. The test that appellant's putting forward, as contrasted with the strict necessity that the Federal Circuit used in Jackson, is a test of saying essentially that if it's outcome determinative and it's done while the appeal is pending, so it's, say, pendency and dispositivity, to say that that's the test does not have a support in the statute or this court's precedent.
Isn't it reading a lot into it to say to impose this strict necessity requirement? I mean, hasn't our court held that when the board has jurisdiction over a claim, the increased rating claim here, it has the authority to address all issues related to that claim? Isn't service connection an issue related to the claim?
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. The court, in the line of cases regarding questions in matter, has not adopted a test of is it related, much less is it related and is it pending. The test has not been laid out explicitly by this court. They've simply noted that they have the jurisdiction to address a question in the matter. And so when asking what makes something a question in the matter, we have to look at the analysis in the one case, in the line of cases that actually lay out what makes something a question in the matter. And again, if we turn back to Jackson, we see that what makes new material evidence a question in the matter of service connection is the fact that by law, the board has to address it. And Your Honor, if I may, there's the possibility of an absurd outcome if the test that appellant proposes were adopted, which is that in the event that there is an increased rating appeal pending before the board that includes an element of TDIU, if the veteran in question filed a claim for service connection that was denied by the RO with no appeal, under appellant's rule, the board either would have jurisdiction over that unappealed service connection claim because it's done while the appeal is pending and might affect the outcome, or in order to determine whether it had jurisdiction, it would have to ask whether, had service connection been granted, that might have driven a grant of TDIU. And that is contrary to any decision by this court, and again, does not match the grant or the statutory construction that that Congress provided in 7104, 7105, and 511. And so for that reason, the test that appellant proposes for what makes something a question in a matter is unworkable. And rather, we should be asking whether severance of service connection is a question that the board had to address with some outside obligation comparable to the bar of a grant of service connection on a previously denied claim absent new material evidence. And there is nothing comparable in this case. The nearest thing we have to a question relating to severance in this matter is, was severance or was service connection severed? And having answered that, the board satisfied its obligation under the statute. And so the board lacked jurisdiction over the propriety of the severance.
Judge Meredith, anything further?
No, thank you.
Judge Jaquith?
No, Judge Greenberg, thank you.
I have a question, counsel. What does the duty to assist concept, which is a paramount statutory responsibility of the secretary, have to do with this? He's got everything before him in this case, or the board does. Why stick to the rule of format or formula rather than just taking down and looking at it? There's absolutely nothing to stop that procedure from going ahead. Why didn't the board or the RO, somebody, say, look, this is how you perfect your appeal. We told you it before, or we think we have. You don't seem to understand it or get it. So what's wrong with that? The broad duty to assist, how is that not implicated here?
Your Honor, there's no specific duty to assist that would require the agency to provide more notice than was already provided. In as much as the agency does have an obligation to provide notice to the vet, to appellant, the last statement of the case regarding the severance informed appellant that if he wished to appeal that decision, he had to file the appeal that was required. And beyond that, there is no additional duty to assist that would require the board to verify the intentions of appellant regarding this severance.
Well, all right. Well, everybody's here now. Why shouldn't we address it?
Your Honor, the propriety of the severance?
Yes. No, the outcome here. By the way, what is the actual difference between the current state of affairs with regard to this veteran and if the court were to intervene and said the board got it wrong? They should have considered both issues. What's the actual difference to this veteran?
Your Honor, the difference for the veteran would be that it would depend specifically on the nature of the order. But if you found that the board had erred in failing to take jurisdiction over the severance, then the board would adjudicate whether that severance had been proper. If you found that the board erred by failing to address whether it could, then that would be one step removed. Whereas the other outcome would be to require the veteran to file an allegation that the severance was improper, was a result.
I'm sure I'll be able to ask counsel for the appellant. But the veteran doesn't care which legal pigeonhole this is put in. He's entitled to a benefit. He thinks it should be something that the board thinks otherwise. I'm asking you categorically, is there any way to quantify that for us? The court matters here. The matter is here. We're going to have to decide the case. So what are the outcomes if we decide one way or another?
Your Honor, the outcomes are... on the scale, on the one side, we have the possibility of addressing the severance even in the appellant's favor. On the other side, the question is not simply affirming the board decision, but rather outlining the implementation of Congress's structure for appeals under the legacy system. Those are the two quanta that are at play. On the one hand, it's the outcome of the case. On the other hand, it's the articulation of a rule going forward for what constitutes the board's scope, what's required in order for the board to take up a matter.
Fair enough. Thank you. Anything else from my colleagues? All right. Anything more, counsel, from the secretary? I don't want to cut you off. I mean.
No. No, sir. At this point, I would just like to conclude by saying that the board lacked jurisdiction over the severance because appellant never filed a substantive appeal. Severance is not a question in the matter of the increased rating, and the RO severance did not deprive the board of jurisdiction. And if there are no further questions, the secretary respectfully requests that the court affirm that part of the board's decision denying entitlement to an increased rating for a left knee disability and TDIU. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, we'll proceed to hear appellant's rebuttal. Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. Three points in response to the government's arguments. First, even by the strict necessity test the government proposes, the board should have addressed the propriety of the severance here. By the board's own admission, the severance was dispositive of the issue on appeal. The board had to address the antecedent question of whether that severance was proper. Second, to Judge Jaquith's colloquy about whether this issue was reasonably raised, I'd just like to direct the court's attention to the pages of the record that have raised this issue and have done so since before Mr. Brady perfected his rating appeal. First, with the SOC on the rating at page 2603 of the record, where, as Judge Jaquith pointed out, severance was already an issue that the agency had teed up. Second, with the notice of disagreement with the severance, where Mr. Brady indicated that he believed he was entitled to continuing service connection. Third, Mr. Brady's 8940 at page 354 of the record, where he indicated his belief that his left knee disability should still be service connected. And fourth, the rating SSOC at pages 1463 to 72 of the record, where the agency told Mr. Brady that the severance was impacting his pending increased rating appeal and that he need do nothing if he wished to continue seeking additional compensation, which of course also meant continued service connection. The third point is that this is a narrow issue, and the secretary's hypothetical and the parade of horribles that would potentially result from a ruling in Mr. Brady's favor here is inapposite and illusory. This is a narrow question about whether a severance impacts an increased rating appeal when it happens during the pendency of that appeal by operation of 3.400.01. And just a quick final point, the proposed alternate means of relief here illustrate why allowing the board to ignore whether the severance should have occurred is contrary to the proclaimant means of processing claims that the government is supposed to follow. I've heard no defense of the propriety of the severance here. It directly impacted Mr. Brady's pending appeal. And rather than have the board address that matter, of which it was clearly aware, or rather question in the matter, the proposed alternative relief is for Mr. Brady to now have the burden to show cue on a decision where the agency failed to show cue in the first place when it was its burden to do so. So for those reasons, we would ask the court to direct the board to address the propriety of the severance on remand. If I may just briefly address the other two issues that are on appeal here, Your Honors. One is the service connection for the bilateral heel disability. I believe the parties are in agreement that the board relied on an inadequate exam to deny service connection there. And we would also ask the court to reverse the board's clearly erroneous finding that Mr. Brady did not have a bilateral heel disability. It did appear to assume for argument's sake that he did, but to clean up matters on remand, we would ask for that finding to be set aside. And finally, on the matter of TDIU, that matter is intertwined both with the left knee disability rating and alternatively with the service connection for the heel disabilities. So we would ask for a remand of that issue as intertwined with one or both.
All right. Questions, Judge Meredith?
No, thank you.
Judge Jaquith?
No, thank you, Judge.
Thank you, counsel. If you have anything further, feel free to add it now. But I think the court is satisfied with the excellent presentation by both counsel, both in writing in advance of the argument and the detailed and excellent presentations from both of you here today. Anything further, counsel?
No, thank you, Your Honor.
All right. The matter of Brady will be submitted. Thank you.
And the court is in recess.